But severely lashed, if you had in some 18 cuts, if you had a terrible howl, the whole stuff, if you, things like that. During that period, only one of the people.
What sort of man was Chalmers?
Chalmers was a good man up to the time the things arose. But he was sent away immediately to John and listen to him. Yes, he believed what the other people told him. That's why he began.
And
it's not right for such a bad man.
Wasn't he rather cynical and cold?
No, cold, and he was colonial secretary of that. But as governor, he was bitter.
And another important man in 1915 was Denham. Denham.
Oh, Denham, the director of education.
That's wrong.
He hadn't much to do before.
It would seem that much of this action was done under the orders of this General America. And there is some indication that he was a bit dotty. Did you get the same impression?
Yes, of course. He was not with the people, he was his own, with his orders. You see, he was that.
There's a lot of criticism of Dalvidian, but I'm beginning to wonder whether he had as much influence on policy at that time as people seem to credit him.
I think he had. He moves with everybody, you see. So that's how he gets the influence. Now, after I, when he failed in his attempts to discipline me and crush me, became surveyor, you see, saluting and all that kind of thing. That's the kind of cat that he is.
Was he arrogant at all?
Never to me. I didn't find him arrogant.
In that case, would it be correct to define his policy as kiss the feet and bind the hand?
I think so. Could easily do that. I gave him so many stories about this, what he did, about inviting me to his headquarters, holding the car out and then saluting and all that.
Which year was this? Which year?
That was in 1937 or 38. You didn't think that that was?
No, I saw it. Also, in your...
He was stealing some of my papers. Is what the Inspector General confessed that he stole those papers.
Coming in the post?
Yes, yes. He was a thief, coming thief. He said, I took the opportunity to write a card to him.
Pedris. You refer to his execution.
Yes.
What was he actually charged with?
He was charged with shooting a man. You see, at the time of the riots, some of the Moors in Petah began looting the Sinhalese boutique there. When Pedris was in uniform, he was a town guard, and then he took his revolvers, people were coming on. He took the water and shot him on the leg, down below the knee. He didn't die or anything. You see, he was taken to the hospital and then immediately Pedris was arrested. So because he shot him, he didn't die. And he was taken and then sent to jail, sent to Madras. And about a week later he was court-martialed, taken to the death cell, and following day was executed.
This would seem to indicate that the Secretariat was biased in favor of the Moors.
Yes, it was.
Would it surprise you to hear that the governor, Chalmers, did not know of Pedris's execution? And that till after the event?
No,
this was the one exception. Normally, all the executions, at least before they were executed, it was sent to the governor for check for confirmation.
Yes.
And he could grant clemency. But this one case, he was not informed till afterwards.
But I was told that when they approached Thomas, and Brown said that he'll give this waiting gold, the money, if he's released.
Who approached Thomas?
Predica's father. And Thomas refused. That is the story.
Was that before the trial, or was there...
No, after the trial, you see, he was to be executed. He hasn't said this. I don't know how far it's true, but...
Certainly this dispatch, I don't think he would lie on this. He said there was one case in which there were 17 or 18 cases which of execution. This was sometime in July, pretty early. Mm-hmm. And he said all bar one, and that case of Don Pedro, he was informed beforehand. So he was able to check on the court martial.
But he said in this case he didn't. It was such a sensational case. Papers had taken it up. I wonder if it's correct. How did you get your information?
This is in the sessional papers, one of the dispatches.
The dispatch. And you see, he is writing to London the day after the execution, saying that, was it the officer commanding the troops?
Yes, that's right.
Saw fit not to inform me of this execution.
Oh.
And he's writing the day after, so as it was said, it was writing either in anger or to cover himself.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we wondered what are the reasons that...
He went to talk, no, what he could. The governor must get the law.
No, not under martial law.
Not under martial law.
Malcolm could have executed anyone. It was pure, what can I call it, just because they were cooperating with the civil government that as a sort of... That they sent it to the governor, but it was not essential for the CMC to do it under martial law. In theory, he is in complete command.
Mm-hmm.
Though in practice, I think they work together.
Are there any relations?
Yes. Oh, yes, there are.
Number of them.
Going on from, when was your full tax campaign?
1918 to 1920.
You allude to James Peace and this National Congress, and you felt that these, shall I say, bourgeois leaders were much too conservative in outlook.
Yes. Tremendously conservative.
And cooperating too much with the British.
Mm-hmm.
From the question of, from the pragmatic outlook, I was wondering whether this question of cooperation didn't yield better results. I'm not thinking of the principle, but by cooperating and moving with them, couldn't you get more in the way of...
In a way, this is a political aspect of it. If you... Now, the letter made a letter clear, the British Labour Party is actually invited to Ceylon, Burma, and India, on their own, not by an invitation. But it's ridiculous to say that we went one, went and fetched freedom from the British. No. They who called us, this is granting freedom to India, freedom to Burma, and at the same time, they thought of Ceylon and invited Ceylon. In fact, the DS and I had told me that he was going to England for this purpose. I hope it would be something useful. And he came with independence. You see, and he told in a public meeting, he donkeys in the heart of freedom and all that. But he said that I didn't get it, it was they who gave it.
Uh-huh.
You see? That is the position. That is correct in that way. You see, I think it was because of the policy of the party at the time. The country were there, I don't think we got it. But the policy of the party was that, to count freedom to all these.
Now, I was thinking about the 1920s. As far as I know, I mean, you were, to the Secretariat, certainly you were an opponent. They didn't like you.
No. They ordered not to publish anything that I say or anything.
I was wondering whether from the pure question of tactics, those who got in with the British model, so to speak, were able to extract more from them than being in complete opposition.
No, I don't think they were in any mood that way at that time. Uh-huh. This developed later on.
Oh, I see.
There was no such thing. There was contempt for the whole other people at that time.
And also surprising, rather sort of bad feature of the 20s, early 20s and even before, that was this split rising between the Tamil and Sinhalese leaders. Why is it that Ramanathan and Arunachalam began?
That's a very, very pertinent question, and rightly asked, because there was a Sinhalese, what should I say, lining, you see, to get everything that they want.
Uh-huh.
You see, and refusing, denying the Tamil settlement. You see, they are right.
Uh-huh.
Now, Arunachalam trusted the Sinhalese. He was the president of the Congress.
Uh-huh.
And everybody expected Arunachalam to be the president of the, he's the past president of the Congress to be nominated to the Columbus House seat.
Uh-huh.
Columbus House seat, there was James Pierce and his brother-in-law was nominated to the Low Country Product Association. Two brothers-in-law. So in Israel, given one seat to one of those and then one another seat to the Tamil. Tamils were completely ignored. It's a very bad thing.
This was in 1920 or 24?
24.
24.
24. You see, that was new reform. That was new reform and all that. And suddenly, Arunachalam was in such a splendid program. And mind you, the only man who encouraged me in adult suffering, mm-hmm. is a good fight for it, one man who told me.
But even before 24, the Tamils had sent delegations and they seemed to be fearful for their position. Even
that is so. Right through the habit. In fact, I remember in the Congress, if people must understand that you have 40 million people in India. You can bring them over at any time, like that kind of thing. There was always antagonism between the Sinhalese and the Tamils. And antagonism brought about by the leaders, not by the masses, by the leaders.
Did the British try to foster this?
I don't think so. In this way, if they could have, by the seats and various things like that, you know, that put one against the other.
Did they?
There was no visible attempt made. Uh-huh. There was no visible attempt made. Except the Sinhalese have been really denying to the Tamils.
This 1924 constitution, you were in the council then, weren't you?
Not in the council.
Not in the council.
24 to
30. I was wondering what you thought of the Constitution, pre-Dharmata.
There's nothing much in it, except the same old thing, having no seats, and only a majority.
But didn't the majority enable the Finance Committee of the Council to wield considerable power?
Not so powerful as it should have been.
Mm-hmm.
It should have been. Probably. Were not able to grasp the situation at that time.
What did you think of Manning?
Manning, usual governor, to come and pass in the school.
And some of the leading personnel at that time, Alexander and Senior.
Alexander, that is the civil servant?
Yes.
He
was
a good man.
Was he rather stereotyped?
No, he was a little more inclined to be with the party people than anyone else.
Mm-hmm. Clifford as a governor?
Clifford was, of course, yes, his own ways, his sarong and he's the same type of man, nothing extraordinary about him,
mm-hmm.
except Sir John Anderson.
What sort of man was Anderson?
Anderson, yeah, he did second year.
Engineer
Berrien.
Uh-huh.
His corpse was put into a gun carriage And that of, is it a scandal?
Was he very sympathetic to
The whole time he was with the trying to do something.
Did you realize that he had discovered that Stubbs had lied on one point earlier? When he was in England, Stubbs had sent something. And when he came here, he discovered that Stubbs had sent something false. So I wonder what his relations with
what was that?
I don't know.
There was nothing that was discernible at the time.
It was a report from the wires, wasn't it, with the, E.W. Pereira Singh, his colonial, had made certain allegations. And colonial office were anxious to know whether there is any truth in all these. And Stubbs said, disregard it all, don't take any notice. And I think that is the gist of it. And then when Anderson came here, he discovered that most of these stories are true. These events had happened,
yes,
so there had been miscarriage of justice.
In the 20s, one aspect was, well, even before the 20s, but one aspect of nationalist critique of British rule was this criticism of the Wastelands Ordinance and its implementation. Did you participate at all in this?
No. It was far gone then at that time. In fact, I dealt with it in England. Referred to it in my speech at the British Communal Labour Conference.
Well, the Koreas were leading.
Korea.
But what is strange is that the Koreas themselves had lots of plantations and.
Especially the younger man.
So I was wondering whether this was, well, in a sense hypocritical, because they themselves were buying up lands from the villages.
Victor.
What about Madhavala and himself? Did he too buy up lands? Didn't you feel that, did you ever feel that the peasants had suffered as a result of these lands?
Oh, very little. I mean, well, the Korea could have done damage as well.
No, I was thinking of the British.
Oh, yes, of course, at the start. This is a good deal.
Well, what is still happening in the 1920s?
Because they had disappeared. They are buying an acre of land for 25 cents. Yes, in the record, somewhere in the Parliament, it was said, the man, somebody bought an acre of land, 1,000 acres for 25 cents an acre.
From whom?
From
the villages.
And built a big estate, which the governor, somebody, became director of the estate, I don't have the name, became the director of the estate.
No, but if this is land being sold by the villagers, it was not something.
I think they'll say it is a terrible villagers couldn't have so much of land, but there must have bank some tree, they must have got all this land.
Did you feel that in the late 20s, Elphinstone and Murchison Fletcher were also trying to play the political game and quite often also giving in to political pressure?
Political pressure in what way?
Well, in the finance committee, people criticized government for this, or privately, people like Forrester or Besekra and others went and asked them to do this. And said, if you do this, we'll give way on this point, you know, vanity. And did you feel that they were?
I don't think Fletcher had a hand in that way. No, I think he was a statesman. He always stuck me as a statesman. Yes. He lived in his, what he thought about it, and actually did his accordingly. There's nothing to try to disguise.
You see, I discovered that he was very, very unpopular with the civil servants who distrusted him. So I was wondering, and who felt that he was not protecting them sufficiently in council. I was wondering,
it may be that now you see, you know what the civil servants are. You see, and if they come into open criticism in council, you see, a straight man can never protect in every detail. So it may be that. And in that way, I say that this man has been very strict. You see, now take for instance the Tamcaster, that address he gave at the, in Parliament, in the State Council. You see, the whole, that whole story. Only the reason why he did not appoint a commission. Well, he said he was going to appoint, but he didn't. Because everything was tied away or something like that happened. But if you read that speech, it was really a very good one. And he was the one who sent to the 18th. To put in the police. They dismissed Haringey.
For what?
For interfering in this. Now this, when the riot took place in the Tampa Bay strike, now it's 18 was away. And he came suddenly one day. And then he took over the charge. That was the day that I heard that if you had given the orders to the police, asking them to shoot me at sight. You see, and the very day a constable sergeant came from the Petra police and said that there was a conference. This is what Edkin said. He had five inspectors.
Edkin or King?
Edkin.
Edkin.
That he had five inspectors given the orders. So be careful. I laughed at the thing. I said, how could that be possible? And then actually it happened. You see, there were 300 red shirt volunteers. They were all driven out of the road. You see, and the riot was then taking place little by little. You see, then the people began attacking the police. All the police outside everywhere, even here, were attacked. But they thought that they were asked to go to the barracks. Not a single police constable was out. You see, and our people kept order. You see, traffic order. Well, it was a very nice step. I mean, the police went to the front.
But isn't it rather difficult to control a mob? I mean, were you able to?
Oh yes, we did control the mob. That is the most wonderful part of it.
But what about the attack on the police station? Was it?
Oh, that was there in Maradana. Concentrated in Maradana only. No other police stations were attacked. Only the policemen were attacked. The attack was on Maradana. The police were there, so much of stones and other levels above. You see, about 5,000 mob collected and attacked.
Yes, sir. I mean, you couldn't prevent that?
You couldn't prevent it. In fact, I couldn't be there. I tried to go, I couldn't go, because people were coming behind me. If I went there, people would have thought that I was being reinforcements.
Oh, I see.
And if I went alone, you see, then the crowd would come upon me. You see, they have helped me to join them and then carry on.
And you would be implicated?
I didn't want that. I didn't want the crowd at all. There are 25,000 people at the consistory buildings.
What do you think of Stanley as a governor?
He's good.
Did you feel that he was genuinely sympathetic to the national
movement? I think so. In fact, I had him several times talked with him. He was very sympathetic.
Now, I was wondering whether it came from his heart or whether it was a case of a deliberate policy.
I think it came from his heart, whatever he said. I believe in him because he had several talks with me about the trade union and various things. And then you can see that the sincerity of the man he talks is the only matter.
Yes, but on the other hand, it was Stanley who was, it was in his time, shall I say, when this anti-trade union legislation was passed, wasn't it?
They tried to pass it.
Well, they passed it here.
Anti-trade union, what is that?
There were four bills to control and restrict trade unions, which Sidney Webb in England got passed it, vetoed it.
But
it was Stanley who was trying to push the draft legislation through.
I don't think that man is capable of that.
Who?
In fact, he told me that these medical people lost to pay me trade union. He actually told me, one at a dinner.
Did he have any other advisors who were probably anti-trade union? The colonial secretaries?
Colonial secretaries, there were, of course.
Not yourself, Fletcher, at that time.
But in 1928, when you went to England, Henry Dimet tried to prevent them giving your passport.
Yes.
And the colonial secretary came to your defense.
That was Ismail.
28.
No, the colonial secretary was Fletcher.
Fletcher, wasn't he? Is he not a black cat?
Yes.
Who wrote yes, that is Fletcher.
I have only got the thing as CS.
Yes, Fletcher.
CS. Is it signed CS?
No, we might not see CS, I just the colonial secretary.
Yes, it must be. You can't remember this this bill which was passed in 29, was it?
You know, it wasn't really passed.
Not
it was
the...
drafted.
Oh, I see.
And sent for approval.
Oh, I see.
And vetoed, and it never became public.
So it was never public, was it?
Oh, I see, I don't know really.
Wasn't Newnham also in favor of trade union?
He was in a way, just to keep things green.
Oh.
That kind of thing. Oh. That you have generally considered about now, for instance. And we had a meeting about the municipal council workers and a big meeting after the government, success in the government campaign. He came in, he walked in without any invitation.
Oh.
You see, then we appealed to him to give, so he gave. Granted all the concessions that the government granted.
But you didn't really form a union as in the, among the municipal.
We had the municipal council. All the members of the municipal council were in the trade union. All the private sectors were in the trade union.
Oh,
all the government sectors were in the trade union at that time. Do you know that who brought about this government service getting out of the union? Here at ours. He tried at the start, the government at that time wanted to stop the government servants joining the union. I fought against it and they stopped. That was the British government. And the other, this government came in, he got down DS in Ananta and got all the people because they said that my power is being too much. He got all the trade unions out and that is how they found their. One trade union and then some samadhi, then all this came up. He is a famous, now a big man. He has been responsible for a lot of work, wrecking our unions.
Before the Dalmore Commission came out, did the Labour Party give any indication, Labour Party in England, give any indication that the commission would be willing to consider the grant of universal franchise?
No, there was nothing like that. Dr. Damien Shields, he was here a delegate before to Australia.
Yes.
On the parliamentary delegates. There, in his return, I met him. I entertained him, Arthur Henderson, Damien Shields, and three others. I invited him to lunch, and he didn't say anything about it. Nor did Dr. Damien Shields tell me that he was coming in the council.
Or
probably it was after he went.
So he didn't say anything about
it.
So it was your idea to ask
him? After he came here, and I put that idea in.
Did he have discussions with you before?
Oh, yes. I gave him a, you find in the dinner, you see, before the. The interview took place.
When did he come to Ceylon? How long before the commission sitting?
We came with the Dalmore Commission.
Yeah.
No, but and before that, you said he came?
That was about a year before.
Oh, I see.
And had he been told to contact you by the Labour Party people in London when he came through to Australia?
No.
How did he come across you then? How did he meet you?
Because being a labor man, first I contacted him, and then when I came again, I contacted him, and we were all in it together. He used to come to our club room, labor club, and we had red shirt volunteers and all that.
That was when he was a commissioner?
Commissioner.
What did you think of Butler?
Huh?
Butler, Sir Geoffrey Butler.
Nothing much. He's a conservative.
Mm-hmm. and the commission and the constitution itself, the one that they drafted, what was your reaction to it then? The grant of universal franchise and the state council which they set up?
Yeah, of course they didn't like it because it granted the right suffrage, you see. Mm-hmm. So we centered our whole attention on that. And anyone who was going to oppose it, we thought was a reactionary. Mm-hmm. You see, and that's how we opposed them.
But it would appear that, apart from you, many of our politicians didn't like they didn't like this deviation from the Westminster.
So the committee system operating in a municipal council now, you see, I think the committee system would have been...